Hey, y'all. Pretend we're football for the next hour. I'm your host, Will Bazer, and I'm joined alongside by Johnny Brashear and Tim Preston, as always. You guys are listening to the Hornscast Channel. That's the Hornscast Channel on any podcasting platform you can find out there. Today we're going over It's Time, as the Longhorns are now 5-0 since that article, Johnny Brashear. It's been quite a fun ride over this past, 2 weeks? The Longhorns are now 5-0 over their last five games. They've done tremendous in Lubbock. They broke the hearts of OU in very satisfying fashion. So we're going to go and talk about those games, this streak, what it means in the micro sense in, you know, the next month or so, and what it means in a macro sense over the next few years. So let's go ahead and get right into this. Johnny, before I get going, I'll let you go ahead and defend yourself or just say your piece on the article.
Well, just a second. Noted Texas hater, Johnny Brashear, who's absolutely despising this recent five-game run. Noted Texas hater.
That's what I've been alongside Chip Brown, there is Johnny Brashear.
Chip Brown is my spirit animal. That's right. I actually feed him those lines. I tell him they're inside scoops, and he just posts them without thinking.
Johnny Brashear, you suck. Your thoughts?
Tim, real fast before Johnny, I need to go to Tim real fast. Tim, your thoughts on that tweet you sent to Chip Brown?
I stand by
the best tweet.
I stand by my statement, no matter how much I don't remember sending it in the first place. But I stand by it because, damn it, it was the right thing to do. I just wish I could remember sending it initially.
Well, if you need a reminder, I have it saved on my phone in perpetuity. So I'm happy to resend it to you so you can see like the timestamp and the punctuation. It's beautiful.
What a time to be not dead. Thing. Yep. What a time to be not dead.
Yeah. Yeah, I think the first thing I want to say to everyone about that article is clearly you're welcome. I did not realize when I wrote that I was Thor getting his hammer and becoming a god. But apparently my power on this earth is reverse canceling Texas Longhorns basketball. And so... You're welcome, everybody. I wish someone had let me know I had this power earlier because I would have sent it like after the Providence loss so the Texas could be on like a 15-game winning streak right now.
So next year, the first game we lose, it's over. Fire is at.
Yeah. There's serious consideration is being given to changing the name of the recaps to It's Time and then the name and then the score of any given game. I have eaten a lot of shit over that article, and I cannot think of a time in the past when I have been happier to eat shit about being wrong about something than that article. There are people. I got a private message on Reddit thanking me for it. I'm getting tweets from people thanking me for it. Will is tagging me in posts because, of course, he is. I am unironically enjoying all of it. It's awesome. I'm glad we're all having this experience at my expense. I'm really serious when I mean it, that this is a lot of fun, and I hope this lasts until like April. Well, this is be great.
The funny thing about that article is, Johnny, you were so hesitant to call for Shaka Smart's job. So hesitant. That it was like the very last, when there was like 99.9% he's gone. That was when you felt comfortable and posting that article. And you weren't even ready to post the article of potential head coaching hire. You haven't. You were still
It's like a solid 2/3 written. Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
It was so hesitant that you had to be 100% sure that article was going to stand the test of time.
I got so much shit from people for waiting that long to post that article. And now I'm getting shit because apparently that was the catalyst for a dream season. Who knew?
Everyone knew. Everyone knew.
Everybody was still pissed off that it took you that long to write that article.
I know. I have no regrets about posting the article, about how long I waited. Like, this is fine. Man, look, I am happy to be wrong about Texas basketball forever if it means they're winning. Like, I will gladly be Eeyore walking out of every single week just being like, "What is the week it turns to shit?" And it's like, well, they're number one and they're 15-0, and I'm like, "What is the week it turns to shit?" And I'm gonna be like the groundhog. Just bring me out. I see my shadow. Doesn't mean anything. It's fine. I'm happy to be the mascot for Texas starting their run of three straight Final Four appearances. That's fine.
Johnny Beshears, pretend we're football's Lou Holtz. They put their pants on one leg at a time, just like we do.
Yeah. It was 2009, 2010. Every year is going to be 2009, 2010 for you, Johnny?
Oh, God, yeah. No. Please,
yeah.
No.
except in reverse. Like, I'm just, yeah. I'm going to be like, it's over. Like, it's going to be the 11-22 season, except after, like, you know, the fifth win. I'm going to be like, well, it's clearly over. And then they're going to go to, like, the Sweet 16. Yeah. It's just, that's how it's going to work. That's fine. I'll take that. If that is what I contribute to this world, then, you know, other people have done worse. That's fine.
Well, since we've last talked, us three on the show, Texas has gone to Lubbock and beaten Chris Beard, then went to OU, went to Norman, and broke Oklahoma's hearts in very, again, I said it, satisfying fashion, heart-stopping fashion. This team is just walking a tightrope. You know, the first three games of this run, right, where it was Kansas State, TCU, and West Virginia, Texas was just hitting three opponents at the right time. And then Tech was them riding this momentum of that three-game winning streak. This game, this Oklahoma game, this was something different. They no longer had the momentum. The momentum has started to die. So they had to make that run off of something other than momentum. And the last four games before that, it had a similar script of Ramian Jones had done very well, and there was plenty of help from Royce Hamm, Brock Cunningham, Matt Coleman, who is a little gimpy, and Kai Jones. This game was sort of an example of them being able to win off script, which is, you know, it gives you hope.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's, yeah, I think you're dead on with that from the standpoint of you know, when we looked at those four game winning streaks before the OU game, it was, like you said, Courtney and Andrew were just phenomenal. I mean, like, all Big 12, first team kind of, like, that was the performances that we saw from them. Good shooting, good decision making, clutch shooting, good defense. You know, just kind of brought it all in those games and made Matt seem kind of like an afterthought, which was what made the OU game so rewarding for the whole team. Like, we've been talking this whole time, if you go back to October and November when we were speaking about the upcoming season, a lot of us had this idea of, okay, well, we've got Matt, Courtney, Andrew, and Jason. Wow, what a neat four to build on from our scoring standpoint, from guys that can kind of score on different levels and hopefully be very good perimeter shooters to boot. And then that just didn't, for the first 25 games, it didn't feel like that came to be. And then all of a sudden, starting with the TCU game, right? That was the first one. That was different. Like, all of a sudden, Andrew and Courtney strung together a number of games. And so you're like, how long can that last? Well, apparently it lasted through the end of the Tech game. But then against OU, even though we didn't have them, it was, you know, it was being the Matt Coleman show. And I think he was the only Texas player to be in double figures, which was awesome. And really, if you go back and look at the statistics of that game, there are a number of reasons that we should have lost to OU, right? A bunch. Like, it's sort of mind blowing that we beat them. This number has been floated around a lot. OU shot 29 free throws. We shot two. OU out rebounded us. OU had fewer turnovers than we had. OU had three guys in double figures. We had one. And yet we won, right? And we won by making, you know, by holding holding Oklahoma to 28% shooting on the night and 10% shooting from three. And Brady Manick, you know, had an off night. And It was wild. Like it was wild. We hit clutch shots. We needed them. We played fantastic defense. We got some good rebounding in the first half and built up enough of a cushion to kind of get us into the second half, and then got really lucky with those missed free throws at the end. And you know, I think if anything from the first four games, it was a lot of, hey, when this team is clicking, we're pretty good. We were not clicking against OU. That was not an example of clicking. That was some ugly shit. But to be able to win when we're clicking is great, right? You should win when you're clicking. To win when you are not clicking is the kind of things that teams that are pretty good do. So it was nice to win a game like a pretty good team might win, as opposed to, hey, we can win when we're playing well. Yeah, well, so can a lot of teams. So I think you're right. That script and feeling like we can win on script, we can win off script is an important lesson. If we're going to learn it in March, then okay, we'll take it then.
I like to think that in the post-game handshake at the end of the Tech game, Shaka leaned into Chris Beard real close and quietly said, "Not this year, motherfucker." I am really, really just enjoy this idea. Like, no, I didn't think there could be a more satisfying win than the Tech win, and then the Oklahoma win happened, and it is satisfying for entirely different reasons. Like, yeah. Maybe this is part of why this 5-game stretch has been so enjoyable. One is sort of the unexpectedness of it. The other is that it's just, I mean, Texas hasn't won 5 conference games in a row in forever. So, like, that's a huge thing.
Like a decade, you know, like legit a decade.
Yeah. And Rick Barnes didn't do it for a long time. Shaka is just now done it for the first time. Like, it's been a long time. I think what I enjoyed about the Oklahoma game, well, what I enjoyed about the end of the Oklahoma game is that I think Tim is absolutely right that by no measurable means should Texas have won that game. Like, if you give your opponent a 19-point advantage on the free throw line, you shouldn't win a game most times.
19?
It was
27.
Well, no, 19.
They made 21, and
yeah,
we made
2. Made 21, Texas made 2.
I see what you're saying. Okay.
In terms of makes, yeah, it was a 27-point. You're right, Will, that there was a 27 free throw advantage for Oklahoma. And the officiating was shit. Like,
terrible.
I have an acquaintance who is, he's a ref. He does, like, you know, lower level stuff, but he was watching the game. He's a Texas fan, and he kept sending me messages just infuriated about how much money those guys were making for what they were doing. and they were, and he was right. Like, that was a fucking rugby match. Like, that was murder ball.
It was wild.
For the entire game, except for a couple, you know, instances where they called some sort of phantom, very quiet stuff. But generally speaking, I mean, you know, Royce Ham got blood drawn and he got the foul, right? You know, you look at not just the free throw discrepancy. Texas actually was one rebound ahead of Oklahoma in that game. Surprisingly enough, it was 41-40. But there was the free throw, or not the free throws, the 3-point shots. I mean, Texas did shoot better than Oklahoma, but they were both bad. It was 8-28 versus 2-20. So, like, nobody was good. There was the sort of the turnovers were very relatively even. And it was at OU, which apparently has the same sort of attendance problem as Texas right now, which is kind of surprising to me.
Oh, they always have. No, they've been bad for like the last 5 or 6 years. Yeah, even when they were decent in the Final Four year, they can't draw dick there.
Yeah, and I don't get that, right? Like, it's I mean, one, you're in Norman. What the fuck else do you have to do? Two, Lon Kruger puts together pretty entertaining teams. Like, his teams offensively are very entertaining. They do good stuff. Like, I mean, I get there's a down year here and there, right? Like, but still, he puts together a nice brand of basketball. Like, I would be happy to have Lon Kruger as my coach personally. you know, maybe it's like a Rick Barnes thing where they're just sort of used to him and numb to it. But anyway, point being, it's Shaka has been, you know, not to absolve him, but he has been very unlucky for the past 4+ seasons. He has been unlucky in injuries in terms of Cam Ridley, in terms of Andrew Jones and leukemia and all this other stuff. And it just feels like maybe for this 5 games, maybe somehow he's getting some interest back on that luck, right? Like, they should not have won that game against Oklahoma.
No, especially
the way the refs were calling it, especially the way that that Oklahoma was defending the pick and roll. Like, there were a lot of reasons why Texas should not have won that game, but they got it right. And you take
all that
it.
Luck was in that last shot.
Yeah, pretty much.
In the missed free throws.
Yeah, exactly right. And I think. Is we'll get into sort of the how much the coaches are responsible later on, but it's, you know, at this point I'm just enjoying this because it reminds me a little bit of the 1990 team. I talked about that in the recap. In that, I mean, maybe in terms of the sort of on court results, obviously they're completely different products, right? Like Pender's teams versus this team is a completely different thing. But there's sort of this unexpected run level to it that like. That Texas team in 90 was, what, an 11 seed. They should not have made it nearly as far as they did.
Yeah.
And they sort of showed this heart and this toughness, and they beat teams that maybe they shouldn't have. And it was exciting, and it was fun. And, like, I'm enjoying this as much as, you know, watching 39 and 58 seconds of that game was murder. The last 2 seconds, I don't remember... Like, I don't care about the first part of it. Like, I got to watch Oklahoma fans just go silent 20 seconds after yelling Texas sucks over as a chant. Like, I got to watch various tweets with videos of guys being like, oh, yeah, it's party time. And then, you know, Doolittle misses 2 free throws. And they're like, it's okay. And then he hits the Coleman hits a shot. And they're all like, no. You know, like, that's awesome. That's fun. Like, at the end of the day, this should still be fun. We should be fans. We should enjoy these moments. And so, you know, it's okay to enjoy it for however long it lasts.
What must it be like to be a fan of a team that's good consistently? That must be incredible.
I think it's probably kind of miserable, honestly. Like, talk to Kansas fans, and they go to the Sweet 16, and they're annoyed. They're pissed off. Like, they're just like, you know, this is whatever. We won the Big 12 again. Like, I saw Kansas fans who were happy when they ended that streak. And they were like, fine, it was just getting to be kind of a pain in the ass to deal with. And it's like, I'm sure it's like Alabama fans when they don't make the national championship game of football, right? Like, they're like, you know, well, we should be in the playoff every single year. Like, there's something to be said for being a fan of a team that once in a while greatly outachieves expectations. Like, probably what that 2008 Texas football team is probably the closest football example I can think of, where it was like they're supposed to be good, but they didn't expect that run up until the Tech game, right? Like, that was sort of a, you know, playing with house money kind of thing. And I kind of feel like that's what this is, where we all, well, other than one dude on my timeline, had written this team off, and we all were like, well, this is done. Let's talk about Shaka's replacements. This is over. Like, everybody had sold their Bitcoin at the low, or they sold Dell stock at 1990, right? Like, it was like, and then everything starts shooting back up because Texas is putting shit together, right? And so it's rare to be in these sort of unexpected circumstances. And I feel like Texas fans should not worry so much about the consequences of this run and just enjoy it, because it might be 20 years before you get this sort of unexpected joy again.
And real fast, Will, I think what I liked a lot about this particular game against Oklahoma was, as Johnny said, Oklahoma played the ball screen extremely well. They played out to like 26, 27 feet. They were pushing baseline, or it's not baseline, sideline, off of their hedges, which was a very smart thing to do. And so they essentially mitigated a lot of what you normally think you can or hope will get out of Andrew and Courtney. So what did we do? Well, we saw for the first time all season, like 4 or 5 baskets on backdoor cuts. Was like, oh my God, Princeton, let's go. You saw some dump downs to Royce. You saw a lot of straight line drives from Matt where he just like turned on the jets. And to see us have the success that we did in those previous 4 games was obviously wonderful. And then, like you said, to go back to your initial point with like flipping the script, Will, I think that then to see the way that we were able to take kind of what the defense gave us and turn that into like a different type of offensive set and offensive execution was great. Like, all right, well, nice. Now we're putting together some film where opposing coaches have to say, okay, well, if we take this away, then they're going to look at this. And Brock Cunningham can bring this to their team, and so, you know, or whatever it might be. So it was very satisfying just to see us struggle to find a way to win, but also incorporate different wrinkles into how we would score the basketball.
It's just nice to win again. At all.
Yeah.
I think that's the only thing we can really take away from this is, damn, that was fun.
Now that we're on record about it, we're going to lose the next 2 games.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Well, I think I tweeted out, what was it, after Tech? It's Texas sucks until they suck, and then they're good again. But then when they're good, they suck. So we're kind of in this sine wave of basketball fandom.
Yeah, and as much as it's fun to feel again, really, like being a Texas basketball fan is generally measuring your expectations because you know you're not making the Final Four most years. You know that like you're not going to compete with the Kentuckys of the world most years. Like that's just not who Texas is historically, other than this one like 6-year run from Barnes, and so. You kind of got to be like, well, you know, we did this. We got it. It's like you're just sort of building this castle around your heart of like, they're going to break it at some point, but I got to blunt this as best as I can. And this 5-game stretch has been like, okay, open the gates. It's fine. We can feel again. you know, the knife is coming, but it's okay to let the knife show up when it's going to show up.
Right. And then, Tim, you said that. This may be the TCU of last year, this Oklahoma State game. Just kind of getting our hearts ready for that is what we have to do as Texas basketball fans. But I do want to, before we get into more macro and looking forward stuff, I want to ask y'all, where were y'all during the Tech and the OU games? And what were your expectations going into that game and then coming out of it?
Well, I was physically in my basement for both games, although the Tech game, I want to say, was at 11 o'clock, so I actually watched that. Most games I watch at, like, you know, I watch on tape delay an hour or so at least afterwards as I put my kids to bed.
I definitely ruined that one for you.
That's all right. The Tech game was the Tech game I watched in the afternoon, which is pretty cool. My kids were kind of, my son was reading a book and my daughter was like drawing in the room. I was like, I think I can watch the game right now. So I ran downstairs and watched the game for a while and that was pretty awesome. As far as thinking about what was happening during the Tech game, that was one of the more, I don't know if I want to say the best win, because again, you think about like UNC, his freshman shock his first year at Texas when Javon hit that shot to win the game. We won a game at West Virginia early on in his tenure that was pretty good. I guess the UNC game last year when Kerwin hit the big shot at the end, that was good. So we've had some really nice
game after Andrew's diagnosis.
Absolutely. Yeah. We've had some really good wins in the past. But I guess what I would say about this game is it actually was pretty impressive, because I don't think you can overstate how much that game also meant to Texas Tech, because that for them was kind of like their last obviously winnable game, because then they showed really well against Baylor at Baylor on Monday, but now they have to face Kansas, who, like, if Kansas doesn't win the game at Tech on Saturday, Baylor will tie them for the conference championship. Whereas if they win it, they will win outright. So you got to think that Kansas will probably kind of have a lot to play for that game, having not won the conference last year. So Tech probably went into that game feeling pretty hopeful that they'd take care of business. And obviously there was some of the emotional shit of Beard versus Shaka, I guess. But we kept on hitting shots. Andrew kept on making plays. Courtney coming through in the second half was pretty cool. It was just one of those games where you when you've had the emotional bludgeoning that has been being a Texas basketball fan under Shaka, you can't allow yourself to believe. Right, you can't do it. You can't. As silly as that sounds, you're
constantly waiting for the next shoe.
Yeah, exactly. The other shoe, yeah. And so I know that sounds dumb because it's sports and it's college sports at that. But I care about this so deeply that it's tough for me to really allow myself to get in there. But in that
game, when that OU basket, when that Matt Coleman basket fell,
well, even before that, like when Royce gets that put back. Layup against Texas Tech, I was just like, this is going to happen. Like, we're going to win. Like, that was really cool. And then what happened? What was the next shot to that? Was that an Andrew three? Did Andrew hit a three after that? Or maybe it was Courtney hit a three after that?
I think Courtney Ramey hit a three at the buzzer. Was that that play?
No, that was earlier. But yeah, That Ramey three, the off-balance Ramey three was a big one, yeah.
Yeah, and it's just kind of like, oh, this is... Yeah, this win is really good, and the OU win was, like, again, as Johnny said, strangely satisfying in a very different way. But to go into Tech and win by double digits was like that's the win of a team that's decent. So that's the kind of win that really allows you to kind of get your hopes up, like, oh, okay, so at our peak, or at least like approaching our peak, we can go to a heated rival against a team that's a really good defensive team. And smack them in the mouth by double digits. Like, all right, now we need to start taking a different kind of assessment of what this team is capable of. The OU game is a fluke. It really is a fluke. It's just a fluke. Because if we had played Kansas, and Kansas shot 29 free throws, and we shot two, you know how bad we're losing to Kansas?
Yeah, probably by 14 or something.
least, right? Right. So, if that's what happens against most teams, we're going to lose. Even if, like, it's Kansas State or TCU or whoever, like, we're going to lose if those numbers happen again. So, like, I don't want to recreate the OU game. But I do feel like the Tech game was a lot of things. Like, again, when we play like this, when our style is allowed to do what we want, like it was in that game, when we see how the tough nose plays of Royce Ham and how energetic he is and how Brock is just coming into his own as a player that can impact winning on numerous parts of the floor, as Kai is coming into his own, as we see that Courtney and Andrew are ready to ascend to that next step, it just feels really good. It's really good. It's what we've been hoping for a while, and I'll ride it as long as we can.
I think with... the way I look at it is the win against West Virginia was the first sign that this was more than just sort of a dead cat bounce, that this was beating the lower teams in the conference. The win against Tech, as much as I kind of quietly hoped it would happen, I was not confident it would happen, but the fact that it did happen, it opened up another level of possibilities, right? And then before the Tech game, I'm looking at, okay, where is Texas possibly going to end up in the Big 12 conference standings? Like, there's sort of, prior to that game, it was like, okay, fifth is maybe as good as Texas can legitimately think about. And once they went into Tech and they won as convincingly as they did in that second half, then I started to get nervous. Because I realized how much of this hinged on beating Oklahoma. Because Texas and Oklahoma in the Big 12 standings are sort of equivalent. And so that became sort of an elimination game. And it was... I got really nervous partly because of the possibility, partly because Oklahoma was the favorite, and they should have been. It was partly because... If I am looking for the best case for the rest of the season, it hinged on beating Oklahoma. And without beating Oklahoma, things got very murky on a number of fronts. And so as much as I wanted to beat a rival, as much as I wanted to go take that game from Oklahoma, I wasn't confident it was going to happen. And especially the way the game was being called and all that. I spent basically the entire second half, most of the first half and the entire second half, just kind of watching with my hands covering my face like I'm watching a horror film, just waiting for that point in time in which shit goes south permanently, and I hate myself for hoping again. Like, I have that moment, the Shawshank moment, where like Brooks is like, I'm not built for this time, and I'm just gonna write my name up in the ceiling and hang myself and be like, that's done, like it's fine, I should have learned my lesson. And then they won it, and it's like, okay, I'm gonna roll with this as long as it goes. Like, I'm just gonna roll with it, and I'm gonna get hurt at some point. We're probably going to lose some crazy ass 3-quarter court shot like Northern Iowa or whatever, right? Like, it's something is going to come in and hurt, but I am okay with being hurt again, and that's progress, at least as yeah. my counselor says. So
no, I completely agree, and like. allowing this season to frustrate you whenever the end comes, and I guess we just have to assume it will not be trimming the nets at the end of the year, wherever it might be. But
we might trim the nets, Tim, at the Irwin Center,
right?
That's, exactly. NIT yeah. champs back to back.
But just like, that's okay when you can counterbalance that with 5 wins in a row like this. You know, like that, like when sports becomes just like a, I'm going to be depressed, like, ah, man, I hate to be a dick, but like, if I was like a Bradley fan or Evansville or like Texas A&M Corpus Christi, like, and you just know, like, okay, a good year is not being 5 games below 500. Like, I can only really imagine what that's like. But this, you know, as a Texas fan, times under Barnes were good enough that the end of the years hurt, but that's also how good the middle of the season was too. You know, like going 24-10 under Barnes felt good. That was nice. And so an end of the year was crappy, but like, it was still worth following the team because it was fun enough. The last couple of years with Shaka, it's been like, man, this is almost not fun. Like, there's not high enough highs or enough good times to counterbalance how frustrating the end is.
This cocaine is terrible.
Right. Whereas the last 5 games have been like, whatever happens next, right? You know, even if we lose to Oklahoma State, like, that would be bad. But I've really enjoyed these last 5 games, which is cool. I'm glad that it's happened.
Well, let's go ahead and talk about the significance of these past 5 games, because this is the first Texas 5-game winning streak they've had since 2013-2014 season.
In conference.
In conference, right? Texas is primed for their first 20-win season since Shaka's first year when he was playing with Rick Barnes' seniors. This is setting up for quite an end. Oklahoma State is now very, very important, but let's take a look at the win streak's significance in a micro and a macro sense. So in the view of this season, it's obvious what this means. Texas now has worked their way back into a potential March Madness spot. They have the potential for getting the number 3 ranking in the Big 12 if Texas Tech loses. They have a shot to really turn their season around. It's not over. The season's not over, obviously. But it's, you know, the seeding for the Big 12 tournament has just swung heavily in their favor. Getting to March Madness, they're now sort of one of the last 4 in, potentially last 4 byes if they do well in the Big 12 tournament. And on top of that, the new rotation of players, right, which has sort of been forced on Shaka Smart. So I do want to talk about that, you know, Shaka Smart being forced into this hand, and what does that mean? Because a lot of people have been talking about Shaka Smart in downplaying the success of these past 5 games because he's been forced into playing Royce Ham, Kai Jones, Will Baker, and Brock Cunningham, your boy, Johnny. So let's Brock go ahead Cunningham. And start
he knew
with
from
that.
The start. He knew from the start. Never
so
had a
let's,
single
let's
doubt.
Start off with that new rotation of players and really go over that. What is the significance of this five-game rotation and sort of the five-game win streak due to this rotation?
So a couple quick housekeeping things before we get into that. It is possible for Texas to get in to the third seed, even if they lose against Oklahoma State. At that point, the important thing is that Oklahoma does not win. So TCU would have to beat Oklahoma. So if Texas Tech and Texas both lose and they're 9-9, if TCU beats Oklahoma, then Texas is the third seed on tiebreakers. It would be obviously better if Texas wins that game so that we don't have to deal with all the tiebreaker stuff. And it would also be much better if Kansas beat Tech. So Rock Chalk.
rolls off the tongue. This rolls off the tongue.
I said it. So I'm never going to say anything positive about Baylor, but I can manage the sort of, you know, status quo. That's fine. I'll manage to say that without vomiting. I think there is something to be said. Like when we came into the season, one of the things I had heard prior to the season starting was that Brock Cunningham was one of the best rebounders on the team. And that in the two scrimmages they had, he out-rebounded everybody else. And I think it is that performance, which is why he got the start when Gerald Liddell was in concussion protocol. His first game, he did not perform well. Liddell came back and, then Brock sort of fell by the wayside for quite a long time. With the injuries being what they are, Texas, Shaka and his staff have been forced into a pretty specific rotation of players. They've got 8 healthy scholarship guys, especially with Donovan Williams being out for however long he's out with whatever this nagging knee injury is he's dealing with. And so I think there is something to be said for the roster at the beginning of the season being one where maybe Shaka had too many options and he had too many, I don't want to say too many mouths to feed, but it's like if you've got a roster full of 12 guys that are all legitimate, that they all have some sort of legitimate purpose, that the starters, you look at it as, okay, well, Jericho needs to get touches in a specific way. He needs to get sort of the rim runner or, maybe post up a little bit here and there. He's got to do his thing. Jace needs to get shots from deep. So he's got to get fed in a specific way. Gerald has his specific way he can contribute. And once you start picking away at all of these things, like if there are 60 to 70 possessions in a given game, if you were trying to force it to Jericho or try to get Jericho involved offensively, 5 to 8 possessions a game. If you're trying to get Gerald involved, 3 to 6 possessions a game. If you're trying to get Jace 10 shots a game, just to throw some numbers out there, you're already looking at a huge chunk of the possessions in a given game. And so when you sort of spiral that out to 10 or 12 guys who are all trying to get theirs, all understandably, like they're all good players, that they all have something to contribute. If you're trying to please everybody, you may not end up pleasing anybody. And I don't mean this in the sense of like the players were uninterested in helping or not bought in or whatever, but it's like the idea here is at a certain point, if you can cull down into an 8 to 9 person rotation, then things get a little more simple. And I think there is an argument to be made that maybe Shaka had too many toys in the toy box for a good chunk of the season. And when you take out Gerald with his injury, you take out Jace with his injury, you take out Jericho with his injury, then you start taking away these sort of toys that while these are all good players and while they have their uses, when you take them out of the toy box, then you can sort of hone in on, okay, you know, guys like Brock, who he doesn't really demand possessions per se, right? He's a defense and rebounding guy, and he shoots a couple threes, and he you know, makes intelligent cuts, but like he's not a primary a sponge of possessions. Royce is sort of the same way in that he can be a hub at the top of the key, but he's not a guy who's like, I got to get post up six times a game kind of thing. I'm reminded of, and this is going to be me going back into my sort of nerdy music producer days, of there were music producers I knew who would say, who had like a whole room full of synths and drum machines, and they had, you know, software programs where they had a million of plugins, and they would never come up with any tracks because they were constantly tinkering with things because they had so many options that they couldn't kind of focus on any one thing. And there were a number of those guys who over time they would get rid of 70% of those things and focus on what mattered. And they focused on this, you know, I've got this drum machine I can do whatever with. I got this synth I can do whatever with. I got, this one software program with this set of plugins. And they started producing music. And I kind of wonder if Texas is at this point where with the guys who are out and the guys who remain, they now are at this sort of, you know, forced austerity, for lack of a better term, where these guys all have a specific purpose and they all have something they do. And you just kind of, okay, now it's easier to get Andrew the shots he wants. It's easier to get Ramey the shots he wants because there's not like these other people trying to get their shots as well. Does that make sense?
100%. Yeah. I mean, I don't know how to say this without being a jerk. So,
just so. Pretend it's Chip Brown.
Yeah.
Do it.
From the moment that Jace signed on to the team and committed, I was so excited about him. I don't think we miss him. He is an unquestioned D1 talent. A guy that you know, belongs at this level, but I don't think we miss him. I've championed Gerald as one of our better players since, you know, one of our first podcasts last year, and I don't think we miss him. Jericho is probably a pro player for the next 10 or 15 years, depending on which league he wants to be in. I don't know that we miss him, and I think it's one of those experiences where, as Johnny said, it's just like on the one hand, you value what those guys can bring. I mean, obviously, Jace has had a handful of huge games as a shooter for us, and Jericho kept us in games earlier this year, and we don't win at Purdue without Gerald. But from the same token, like it's sort of been a blessing in disguise that Courtney and Andrew have been absorbing those Jace shot attempts and they've made good on it. You know, if Jace has another one of his crappy games, do we lose against TCU? Do we lose at Tech if Jace has a rough stretch? You know, are Andrew and Courtney able to penetrate the lane as effectively as they have if Jericho is occupying that space and his help defender is right there waiting for Courtney at the rim as opposed to him or Andrew having space to get into that spots with straight line drives. You know, it's really been an interesting thing, not just to see Brock kind of come into his own, not just to see Royce, you know, play with reckless abandon and just excitement and exuberance, but also to see like how the different pieces that we've had at our disposal now help to figure out, okay, what is our offensive strategy? What are the strengths of the players that we have that can, you know, be shot makers or playmakers right now? How does that play into who's available? And I want to really uplift Shaka for the fact that he's got the team playing hard and believing in themselves and not giving up, and yet also be like, And he's kind of lucky that, you know, the players happen to kind of fit in together how they have. So it's been pretty rewarding to figure out how things have been fitting, and also pretty cool to know that the guys who are still left playing just sort of happen to fit into their roles pretty nicely.
I've had a, I don't even want to call it a theory. I've had sort of a feeling or a hunch about one of the lessons that Shaka has. It feels like a lot of this Texas tenure is Shaka Smart learning lessons about what constitutes success, what goes into success at a high major level as opposed to a mid-major level. And I feel like one of the things that happened in his early classes is that going from VCU to Texas opened up this caliber of recruit that he never had before. Him and his staff, to be fair, they never would have gotten a guy like Jared Allen at VCU. They never would have gotten a guy like Mo Bamba at VCU. They never would have gotten, you know, I'll just say Jace Febres. Like, there's a certain level of guy that shows up at a place like VCU that does not necessarily make himself available, unless you're at Texas. And I feel like one of the things that Shaka may be learning based off his last couple of recruiting classes is he's sort of learning that just because you can play with all the toys doesn't mean you necessarily have to. Like, there are some guys, if you're not going to be Kentucky, if you're not going to be Duke, where you get four McDonald's All-Americans and one or dones per year, you got to get those program guys who stay for 3 or 4 years. And the last couple classes have had some of those guys. And I feel like maybe this is sort of the this injury bug, this spate of injuries has sort of been the Marie Kondo of Texas basketball, where he's had to look at these guys when they go to the therapist or the surgery.
Do you bring me joy?
Yeah, look at the surgeon. Yeah, and be like, does that bring me joy? If not, throw it out. And so,
what is a Marie Kondo?
She's the lady who is like, if look at the stuff in your house, if it doesn't bring you joy, get rid of it.
Yep. So Will, basically everything that is behind you in this room, you're going to have to reevaluate.
Joy.
Yeah.
It all gives me joy.
All right. Well, then you're going to have a
big sheet of paper, but all of it.
Yeah.
Joy.
You're going to have a big Marie Kondo sized storage unit. Basically, one of the things that I like about Shaka over the years is it does seem like he's sort of learning from the process, right? Like, he had offensive issues and he brought in Neil Berry to help with that. He had defensive issues that year. He brought in Yaklich to help with that. Andre Hootie is supposed to help with strength and conditioning, right? Like, he does seem like he's analyzing and trying to learn in the off seasons as the opportunities present themselves. So my hope is he looks through sort of what happened at the end of this year and he says, he doesn't go, oh, well, the solution is I got to go get three more 5-stars who will be gone in a year. He says, hey, you know, a guy like Brock Cunningham and a guy like Royce Ham are pretty useful in their way. And it doesn't have to be, you know, it doesn't have to be the Monstars from Space Jam up in here. It's okay to have a couple guys who just go get their ass on the floor and go grab some rebounds and loose balls. Like, it seems like if I am looking for the next level of growth from Shaka, it is understanding the value of those 3- and 4-year guys. And hopefully this is something he can take forward.
Let's start taking a look away from the rotation and more towards Texas's positioning into the postseason, especially with the potential for them getting the number 3 seed, really helping them and have a potential another big win, especially if they play, you know, the number 6 team in the conference, helping them, you know, make more of a case into getting to March Madness. Where side of the bubble do you feel they are on right now? And do you feel at this time like they would make it?
I think currently they're in. I think an OSU loss on Saturday would be tough, at least certainly not helpful. Put a lot more question marks in people's minds, like, okay, well, that was a weird run and it's done. So I do think Oklahoma State becomes a pretty gigantic game if they lose. If Texas wins, it's not huge, right? Like, that's not going to move the needle as far as like, oh, well, now all of a sudden we're a 9 seed or whatever. I don't think that's the case. But if we lose, it becomes pretty, at least potentially big. But I think we're in right now. Will, as you said, I think that obviously the chance to beat West Virginia probably, or maybe be TCU. I think West Virginia. To beat West Virginia again would be a nice opportunity to kind of put another feather in our cap. You know, West Virginia still carries a lot of clout from a pundit standpoint because they've had a nice season, particularly early on. You know, so much just depends on does this run continue or is it finished? You know, if they lose West Virginia, are they still in? I think probably they've done enough just to be the 3 seed in the conference tournament. It is a pretty positive thing for them. But there's a lot of question marks. Providence won today. NC State lost yesterday. I think Rhode Island lost today. Rutgers won yesterday. Someone lost at Creighton today. Anyway, so like there's still so many games out there that it's tough to know who got the wins they needed, who was not able to take care of business, that it's tough to feel like you have a real finger on the pulse of these things. But right now I think Texas is in, and if I had to guess, they will probably beat Oklahoma State, and if they do, that's should be enough no matter what happens in Kansas City. But there's still plenty of things to keep your eye on as tournaments play out throughout the rest of the country.
Well, the pretend we're football curse is definitely on because Tim just said probably beat Oklahoma State. So sorry, everybody.
Mark it down as a loss.
Yeah.
It was a nice while it lasted.
Yeah. Thanks for that, Tim. I'm going to send all of my haters your way.
All right, fair enough.
All two of them. It's 11% of our audience. If Texas beats Oklahoma State, they are probably the number 3 seed, given that maybe Tech pulls off the win against Kansas. It's senior night. Who knows? We'll see. But if Texas is the number 3 seed, if they have finished third in the conference, it seems difficult to leave them out of the Big 12 tournament. Where they end up being, you know, we'll see. Right now they seem to be on bracket matrix, they seem to be an 11 seed more often than not. Whether that's as a first 4 or just an 11 seed, we will see. But I think there is a chance that if Texas is the 3 seed, the 6 seed is probably going to be either West Virginia or TCU. Neither of them is going to bring a big crowd to Kansas City, understandably so. So, Texas will be playing in a pretty quiet arena, which they're used to at this point. And then if they can pull that win off, they should be in. And then they're going to be against probably, Tech or Oklahoma.
Do you think the silence ever got so silent it was loud?
Yeah. It's probably during Kai Jones's free throws. It was, or Will Baker threes. No, that was weren't quiet because people either were cheering or screaming, one way or the other. I think it seems like if Texas is sort of running their way towards the, I mean, I'm going to call it the most likely outcome. It would be if they beat Oklahoma State and they end up as the 3 seed, they play either TCU or West Virginia. And then if they can get past that, they play Tech or Oklahoma. And if they can get past that, then they got to deal with Baylor at that point as the 2 seed. But at that point, it's a question of them taking advantage of opportunities for seeding purposes. They, you know, maybe they work their way into a 9 seed as opposed to 11 seed or something like that. But that's kind of where we're at in terms of the seeding discussion, I guess.
I don't think anything higher. Well, you know, you don't want to speculate what a huge run would get us if Texas ended up beating Baylor. Well, West Virginia and Baylor and Kansas, then, you know, who knows how high they can get. But I think, yeah, probably something for a seeding in the much higher than a 10 would be pretty unlikely, and I think they'll be there.
I can't imagine them getting higher than like a 7, even if they win the Big 12 Conference Tournament.
Yeah, I doubt it. Like, you think of like Syracuse a few years ago, well, a few years, like 15 years ago, when Jerry McNamara had that crazy run in the Big East Tournament, and they got all the way to like a 5 seed, although they were about as bad as we were this year at the beginning of the tournament. I mean, I guess that's that kind of rings out a little bit, but yeah, I just, you know, best case scenario, we're 23-11, which just is not enough to get you a whole lot right now. When you think of teams like, again, like, this is silly, but like Northern Iowa is like 25-5, you know, so there's still some teams out there that you think, okay, you know, even if we win the Big 12 tournament, like, they're not going to put us ahead of Seton Hall. They're not going to put us ahead of, like, Ohio State. They're not going to put us ahead of Maryland or whatever, right? So there's a lot of teams that are out there that are probably not up for great seeds either, but have a much better resume than we do at this point, even with a good run.
I'm going to have to cut this part short because we're already at 55 minutes. So we're running over. We're going to be running late on this one, but it makes sense. There's been a lot that's happened since our last show. It's been a lot. It's been a whirlwind for Longhorn fans, but let's take a look at the macro real fast, because Shaka Smart is saving his job, and Longhorn fans are at the same time happy and unhappy about that. What are y'all's thoughts on the macro importance of this 5-game win streak?
I mean, I think at the end of the day, CDC likes Shaka as a person, and would rather pay him $3+ million a year than pay him $10 million and the buyout of whoever he's looking for, et cetera, et cetera. So it seems like, unless there is a collapse at this point, this is not inside information. It just feels to me like, as long as they make it in the NCAA tournament, Shaka's probably going to keep his job for another year.
And are you a fan of that? Is that something that is good, you think? Is Shaka Smart the dude? Is he the one? Is he the answer, regardless of the money situation? If money's no issue here, right? If you can go out and get, you know, maybe not Coach K, but like a realistic option out there, a John Boeheim, is Shaka Smart the guy who you want to stick with for, let's say, 3 more years?
I mean, I think we're at the point where, even if Shaka has, let's just throw out like a best case example that he makes a tournament, wins a game or two, like he ends up in the Sweet 16, loses to a 1 seed, whatever. Like, let's just throw that out there as a hypothetical. I don't see any way that he doesn't come back for next year. On the same note, I don't see how this turns into like him getting an extension or something, right? Like, cause he's still got 3 years left. That's plenty for recruiting purposes. Maybe they do some sort of extension where, he reduces his guaranteed money that's remaining in exchange. Like, they go, okay, well, we'll give you a couple more years, but now it's 50% of your remaining salary or something, right? Like, figure something out, right? I've been a fan of Shaka since he was hired, and I think we're sort of at a unique moment where if he comes back next year, if this turns out to be sort of the season we thought, that next year will provide enough opportunity to make another judgment on him. I don't know that. I think there's enough data out there to say that maybe he's probably not the guy, but at the same time, he is given enough in this stretch he's going to be theoretically have his highest place in the Big 12. Like, he could potentially be third place in the Big 12, which will be his highest finish. He's going to make a tourney, 3 out of 5 years, and you know, maybe he wins games, maybe he doesn't. He's probably going to be sort of in this relatively same situation he was at the start of the season, where it's like, okay, well, your seat's not hot, but it's not cold. And what you do this season will determine things. And maybe he figures it out. Maybe he doesn't. Maybe the team comes back and they are worse than they were last year. Maybe they come back and they're better. Like, I feel like we are sort of at this point where if he gets another year, I understand why people... I listened to Brad Keldner talk about how he was actually rooting against Texas against Oklahoma because he doesn't think Shaka's the guy, and he knew that winning that game probably gives him another year. And I get why some people are that way. I tend to fall into the camp of, well, if he's winning, then, you know, if his money's guaranteed the last 3 years, we can keep going. And if he stops winning, then the end of next year is $3.5 million less or whatever. So it becomes a less expensive proposition as time goes on. So I don't know if Shaka is the guy or not. You know, 5 games ago, I was pretty sure he wasn't. And, you know, odds are he's not. But it's at the same time, this is the second time in 2 years where they put together a 5-game win streak that has been good enough that it has made me question my own look at my own view of things. And so I guess the answer is, I don't know, right? Like I have competing answers in the yes and no category, and I don't have a definitive answer at this point. And it's, I'm not trying to waffle. It's just, there's a lot of data on both sides.
Johnny has a lot of internal conflict.
I have a ton of internal conflict, and I think I just want to, Maybe that's why I'm all about just enjoying this run for however long it lasts, because it's like I can do all this like existential drama later. I just kind of want to enjoy winning.
Right. Sort of. I'll deal with the withdrawal later. I'm going to enjoy this high.
Yeah. Get me to the methadone clinic later. It's fine. I just want to enjoy this right now. Yeah. Speaking of methadone clinics, Tim, what's your thought?
Odds are he is not the right guy for the job. The odds are that the next person will not be the right guy for the job, right? There's, you know, if there's 353 D1 coaches in the country, probably 320 of them or 330 of them are not the right guy, like the perfect guy for the job. If you think about it from that standpoint, I guess I would look at what he's done here and say, hey, it's not enough. Do I want to fire him? No. You know, I really don't think I would ever. Like I suppose unless someone like truly did something so heinous, like a Dave Bliss situation or whatever. Like I can't imagine me calling for the axe on a coach.
Chip Brown was the head coach of Texas basketball?
That would, you know, then there'd be some different conversations altogether. But
like, is he, you know, what's his background in it? I don't know if he has much of a resume in coaching basketball. It would be kind of difficult going from, you know, working at 24/7 to coaching a basketball team. Brings up a lot of questions that we don't know.
From what I have read online, it does not take much to go from any job to coaching. So I'm pretty sure he'll be fine.
What do I want to have happen? What do I think will have happen? I want for Shaka to get another year. I really do. I want to believe what Johnny said, that I think he's going to show some progress and showcase that he's a smart, capable individual who will figure out how he can manage guys at this level, how he can figure out, like, all right, well, I'm going to get, you know, when you're in a place like Texas, you can get 11 or 12 high caliber players every single year. And what do I do with that? And I really do want to be careful that the University of Texas doesn't become the training ground for Shaka Smart into, you know, a job like a UCLA or like a wherever it might be, right? So I'd hate for us to be the place where he learned and figured it out and then for us not to reap the benefits of that. Of course, you know, or maybe he'll never figure it out, right? Like, there's always that possibility as well. But I hope he gets another year. I'd love to see us get Greg Brown and move beyond that. But yeah, I guess if we start talking about coaching changes or coaching scenarios, it's a lot of what ifs, and really probably the biggest, most likely what if is, hey, he's gonna fail, right? Because almost every coach fails badly enough to get fired or taken out of their position, or they try the one next step up the rung and find that they're gonna fail that time. So that's likely enough that I guess if we have an option to say like, well, there is still a pretty high ceiling for this guy if he can figure it out, then let's see where it goes.
All right. Well, I think that is pretty much covers it.
Fingers crossed, my guy.
Pretend you're getting to know us?
Sure.
All right, let's make this one. Hey, you know, we could take our time. Who cares? Whatever. Nobody's listening.
They're all listening on double time. It's fine. Yeah.
So, you are given the power of shapeshifting. What is the first thing you do? Tim, get your finger up.
Oh, sorry. Yep. All right, cool. All right, so here's my whiteness is about to take a huge step into the forefront. So I don't know if people are aware down in Texas, but there's a place in Wisconsin called the Dells. Have you guys heard of the Wisconsin Dells? Is that something you guys heard of?
I've never heard that. Dell means something entirely different in Texas.
Yeah, I'm sure, right. So it is the water park capital of the world, right? So there's a water park called Noah's Ark, which have you heard of that? The water park called Noah's Ark? Or?
I mean, I know about the Creationist Museum that was a Noah's Ark, but that's probably not what you're talking about.
It's not, but good for you. So anyways, there's a place in the Dells called the Wilderness, which is the world's largest indoor/outdoor water park. It's the world's largest. Right. And what is amazing about this place is like there's like 7 different water parks in one. Plus, it's a hotel/condominium resort where you can take your family and say to your 6 and 10-year-old, for instance, go and do your thing. Daddy's going to sit on the side and drink a 44 ounce of Jim Beam and Coke, which is incredible. Right.
Hypothetically.
Now, you can't go into this place unless you have a wristband, right? That wristband is incredibly important. They won't let you swim and be there without it. So if I could shapeshift, I would shapeshift into a slightly trimmer version of myself, slightly trimmer, maybe decently trimmer version of myself with that wristband. So that
specifically.
So that I could go to the wilderness and chill out at the world's largest indoor/outdoor water park and drink large Jim Beams and Coke whenever the fuck I wanted to. Because that shit's my happy place. That's where I want to go all the time. I would go there right now. Right now sounds like a great time to go there. It would be incredible. So if I could shapeshift, I would shapeshift into a trimmer, maybe a touch more... maybe more hair at the very least. On the top of my head, more hair. But with a wristband that would allow me into that particular place.
All right.
Is that not going by the
No, it's
no. That's no, definitely no, going
look,
by it.
It's here's the thing. It is so incredibly relatable and mundane, but also perfect. So, like, I would not have thought of that. I would not have thought of, I'd like a wristband for re-entry as my shape-shifting power. Right? The things I'm coming up with is, they say no in and outs, but I think I want in and outs at this place. Like, it's
shapeshift to me with tickets to the $1 tickets to the Texas baseball game. That's right. What I want.
I'm not kidding you. There is a pool at this place where both my son and daughter would be away from me smiling for like 4 hours. If I could do that whenever, I would be so happy. Where I would know that they were happy, but away from me, it would be just the most magical thing of all time.
I feel like we get at least four listeners based purely off of Tim's parental frustrations. Like the loving frustration of, please leave me alone for a while.
Go away. Go the fuck
away. I love
you, but
leave. Yeah. Yeah, Will and I cannot provide that. That is not a demographic.
We got dogs who we're like, I just want to do my thing at the computer
Staring at me while I masturbate. This is annoying.
I love you, but leave me alone.
Yeah. I'm going to go behind a door for a while. This is very judgy look you're giving me. This is the 21st century. I feel like you should be more progressive. Yeah.
Johnny,
I've earned this.
Do you want me to go?
Yeah, I'll go because mine is apparently incredibly lame compared to Tim's extremely pragmatic yet incredibly relatable idea. I just want to shapeshift into me being like 6'6" so I can dunk. That's it. That's all I wanted.
You don't want to be Taco Ball? You want to be... You just want to be 6'6"?
I just temporarily. Like, I don't want to go on planes as a 6'6 person. I don't want to, like, deal with elevators as a 6'6 person. Like,
so
I don't
it's less shapeshifting and more like Elastigirl or something?
Well, I mean, you shapeshift into a 6'6 person so that I got long enough arms and legs that I can dunk because
at
I've
your
never
leisure.
Done it in my life.
At your leisure.
Yes, right? Like, it's just... I want to dunk a goddamn basketball on a regulation rim without the help of a trampoline, right? Like, this is really where we're at.
Or my BYU Cougar outfit.
Yeah, right, yeah. Like, in high school, I got kind of close, but not that close. Because, like I said, I've never had vertical leap. It's just never been a thing. And so I just really want to dunk a basketball, quote unquote, by myself, right? Like, I don't even want to make this like a Twitch stream. I don't want this to be a thing necessarily even in games. I just want to go to a 24-hour fitness at 10 p.m. on a Sunday as
go to
a
the neighbor's driveway.
Yeah, or somewhere. Like, I just want to go just dunk on a regulation rim, and it will never happen without the aid of either a trampoline or some extremely helpful friends. And just
or
throw me up like Blades of Glory, you know? Like, that's kind of what it's going to take.
Tim, kneel down on the ground.
Yeah.
I mean, use your head as a stepping stool.
Yeah. Tim, can I please use your back as a springboard? That's what I need. Yeah. Yeah. That's pretty much it. Like, I told you, it's lame, but God damn it, I just want to dunk.
I know. I feel that. I understand. I feel like if you got shapeshifting, the first thing most people would do is kind of go with the, let's tip our toes in the pool here and see. I'm going to make myself thinner. I'm going to give myself some six pack. I'm going to some abs.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Or something like that.
Yeah, just for like a day. I don't want to do like the carb routine necessary to keep a six pack.
No, you don't have to. You just shapeshift yourself to start the day.
Yeah, like, oh, look, it's beach season. All right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For myself, most people would do the mundane. Myself, the first thing I thought when I saw this question was dragon.
Yeah.
I want to be a dragon. But then I was like, but what type of dragon? There are so many different types of dragons out in the world that I have no idea. Would I be,
a
Welsh dragon? Would I be... Would I be like the English dragon, you know, where they kind of stand on two legs and have the arms and the wings, or would I be like a Chinese dragon or Japanese dragon where they're kind of like a snake that can fly and got the beard and shit? would I be
like Game of Thrones dragon where of disappear for a season at a time? And you come back with a bunch of dead goat bones around you.
Yeah,
you
know? that are like, you know, maybe just Charizard, which, fun fact, not a dragon type Pokemon, just a flying and fire. Even though dragon type wasn't the first generation of Pokemon. But side note, maybe I just become Charizard. I don't know. The dragon possibilities are endless. They really are. So, you know, if changing question, if you could be a dragon, which dragon would you be?
One of the ones that doesn't die at the end. Like, I would think the Dragonheart dragon, but that's Sean Connery, and that's great until he dies. Maybe one of the Skyrim dragons. That seems like, you know, they just sort of... Or one of the God of War dragons, because most of them don't die. They just sort of leave.
Even being, like, Mushu from Mulan would be kind of cool. Like, for a little bit.
I honestly did not know there was a dragon in that.
Eddie Murphy, my guy.
I never watched it.
What?
I saw they were making a live-action version. I was like, oh, okay, I'll
Yeah, no, that's
going to
suck. But the first one, the OG Mulan, real good. Top one of my top Disney movies out there. Just, you got to watch it.
Oh, okay. Well, then we'll do the, what's the main dragon from How You Train Your Dragon? That one.
The Night Fury blackless one?
Yeah, Night Fury. Yeah.
Yeah.
Actually, no, I take it back. I want to be one of the enormous fat ones that just doesn't really move. Like all the other ones kind of hang out around and you're just like, yeah, I'm going to go eat about a ton of fish. And then I'm just going to hang out. Yeah.
Yeah, I'd probably be Charizard.
All of that just came back to the same goddamn dragon. All right.
I just feel like if you're a dragon, people are going to try to kill you.
Like you're a dragon, you know, you stay for a bit, and then when they're, like, they're about to kill you, you're like, oh, no, wait, I got superpowers. And then you turn into like...
What about just the male dragon from Reign of Fire? Like, yes, it does eventually die, but it fucks a lot.
Yeah. I mean, then Smaug, I guess, right? Like, Smaug's pretty badass because he's around for a long time.
That's Cumberbatch. That's not going to happen. No, fuck that. I'm saying the Reign of Fire dragon because you only show up for 5 minutes and it's fine, and you fuck a lot of female dragons for 30 years and then you die. That seems reasonable.
Cool. Yeah. That's life in a nutshell. You fuck a lot of female dragons and then you die.
In a nut sack, I guess.
In a nut sack. You're right. You're right. Well, that's going to do it for us. Thank y'all for pretending we were football for the past hour and, I don't know, however long, half?
Change.
Almost
hour
20?
Change.
Hour yeah. and change.
Wow.
I've been your host, Will Baizer. You guys can find me on Twitter at WILLBAIZER. Johnny Brashear, where can we find you?
You can find me on Twitter at BitterWhiteGuy. You can also find me on Bark at Carnival. Theoretically, I'm on Horn FM. We'll figure that out once they figure out their own schedule. Also, you can find me on the Pretend We're Football podcast, which is available on most streaming platforms, you know, Google Play and Bing and maybe Google Plus, some other stuff. I want to say Tinder.
Yeah, maybe.
If you swipe left.
Go looking for it. Tim, you would swipe left. Where can we find you, Tim?
Well, after last second wins against OU, you can find me with my face flat on the ground and my glasses kind of bent out in every direction. That
Tim,
was fun.
How was your first class this morning?
It was me purposely standing 5 feet away from any student that came up to me and asked me questions. Like, oh, yes, good question. Good question. Stay where you are. I'm going to talk to you from over here. You don't need to smell what I've got rocking over here, my gal or my guy. InsideTexas.com, awesome website. Come hang out with us on Twitter, InsideTexasHoop. Apparently I shit on Chip Brown when the time is right, and it usually is. Yeah, chilling out with Johnny and Will here on Pretend We're Football on Spotify, Stitcher, Apple iTunes, Apple Podcast.
And next week we'll be having on a special guest. Chip Brown will be joining the show.
Oh, yeah.
So that should be fun. But
is that legit? He's coming. Have you solidified that?
He's coming on. He wanted to talk shit to you after you what you said on Tinder.
I'd swipe left on that bitch.
on that note, thank y'all for listening, and we will see y'all next week. Hook 'em.
Hook 'em.
Hook 'em. Hook 'em, 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 hook 'em. You're welcome.